You can't say that.
Traitor! Traitor!
She's still sleepy.
Are you not well, honorable member?
When are you paying the money?
Hey, hey.
Hong, hong.
You are not allowed to be emotional.
Take your seat.
Draw the lela pili.
Nkansa.
That's unparliamentary.
Hey. Okay, welcome to another edition of Sunday Times Politics Weekly. This week with me, Amiel Amrao. I'm joined with our team at the Sunday Times, members Quanita Hunter and Zingisa Mvumvu. Guys, thank you so much for joining us this week. We've got a massive week ahead, and we've also seen some fireworks flying at the weekend with the ANC's NEC meeting. Let's look back very quickly at what ANC Secretary General Ace Magashule said at a post-NEC briefing at the Thuli House on Monday. Asked questions about his relationship with Ramaphosa and this alleged plot to have him ousted, Magashule said the NEC in the main had occupied itself with the unity of the organization and the challenges facing South Africans. Those were the issues it really focused on, as well as Ramaphosa's economic recovery plan. But then journalists asked him, you know, what about your relationship with Ramaphosa? Is anybody investigating this? And he basically said, oh, well, we're best friends, essentially. He says that he's not going to allow anybody to drive a wedge between him and Ramaphosa, and that they're working very well together to restore unity in the ANC. I think a few people laughed when he said it. I saw some smiles across the board. Some would say he's talking absolute rubbish, based on what we know and what we've seen in the political space. Any comments on what he said, Q?
So I think firstly, you know, we have to answer the question as to why should people care? Why should people care that Ramaphosa and Ace Magashule have a good relationship or bad relationship? What does it impact people's lives? And that's something that has been on my mind this weekend as the NEC sort of focus on that, particularly because, you know, there's been so many stories about relationships, breakdown in relationships between politicians, and to some extent, you know, do people care anymore? And I think that people should care, and that's because this is a president of the ANC and this is the secretary general, you know, of that party, and so their working relationship needs to be in harmony, and to some degree, if you look back at the relationship between former President Jacob Zuma and Gwede Mantashe. They were thick as thieves for a long time, and then there was a fallout in that relationship. And that breakdown in relationship could be very tangibly felt in the run-up to the NASREC conference. Now, you know, what surprised me from this NEC was almost this conciliatory tone that Ramaphosa walked in with. And in his address, his political address, you know, one would have expected him to be as fiery as he was at the Kusatu conference, etc. But he rather, you know, smoked the peace pipe. And his message was a different one, in that everyone needs to sing from the same hymn sheet. And we reported that in the Sunday Times. Now Magashule comes out and says, we're all good, we're best buddies. I think that they've realized that they need each other, number one. And number two, I think this would be part of the long game that Ramaphosa is playing, as to sort of keep your enemies close. Vuvu, do you agree?
Well, yeah, no, comrade, to a certain degree, I agree. In fact, I agree fully. But just to add, baby, on what you are saying, comrade, we'll also remember that the ANC generally has a culture of, sort of closing ranks for the bigger benefit of the party when there are such issues. I mean, we would know that during the former president, Jacob Zuma, and his controversies, that's how he basically survived the votes of no confidence and all the pressure that was, you know, that kept on mounting on the ANC to get rid of him. Because ANC, when they get into these meetings, they sort of take a holistic approach about who gets to benefit if we go this way. And what usually triumphs is what benefits the party at the end of the day. And I think in this regard as well, that's the route they chose to go. Ramaphosa and Cyril and all the factions that are there. The factions exist. We shouldn't get mistaken about that. But we'll remember now, what is even more critical is that we are approaching the elections, and one thing that the ANC doesn't want is to get to the elections to be seen to be divided. Getting to the elections, it confuses even their supporters and voters, because within those factions, Magashule has got his own supporters, the president has got his own supporters. If you go to elections paralyzed like that, I mean, what do the voters vote for when they get to the ballot box, you know? So I think that was the approach that they took, and hence coming out singing this tune that we're best buddies, we are united. It's not like that at all. I don't think there's unity. I think it's just a matter of tolerating each other for the greater good of the party.
If we look at it, and let's look at what H. Magashule's role is in the ANC. As the Secretary General, he's in charge of the day-to-day runnings of the party. He deals with the branches, he deals with the regions and the provinces, and he basically correlates everything together. And if you have a destructive relationship between a person like that and the president of the party, then what can work and what won't work is the question we have to ask for the ANC. And it becomes very difficult. I mean, looking at it in a personal approach, how do you even work with someone who has been shown to be undermining you? It must be a very difficult way to balance that relationship.
I think these politicians have been doing this for a very long time. This is nothing new to any of them. I mean, we know Ramaphosa's relationship with former President Jacob Zuma was a great relationship from the outside. Mm. They would laugh at their jokes and, you know, that kind of thing. This is politics at play. But I think that, them working together, like you said, it's a marriage of convenience now. I think they've reached a point where they realize they need to just get it together, for the kids, really. And I think that these type of arrangements actually hurt relationships more than increase it and then improve it. And we saw it in the case of former President Jacob Zuma and what happened when he fired Pravin Gordhan. You know, that we learned from history there. But I do think that, you know, Ramaphosa doesn't have an electoral mandate behind him. And that's something that he will have to go and try his best to go and get a majority so that whatever he does from a place of authority. You were saying about this sort of creating this front for elections and putting the elections at the center of this. If you saw our story about Ramaphosa saying that everyone needs to speak according to, you know, one message, multiple voices. Do you think that that's possible?
Well, I don't think it's possible. I can see they are trying hard. I think the ANC factions are quite deep and very, emotional, so to speak, at this point in time. I just don't see how that is going to work. Knowing that also there's the big elephant in the room, that is the former President Jacob Zuma, who still has his own troubles with the law and all of that. He's doing his own things on the side, trying to fight back, trying to put himself in the center, trying to keep himself popular with the constituents that he's popular on. So those who are aligned to him, I just don't see them taking instructions from the hegemonic leadership of the ANC to say we must sing this way. From time to time, I foresee people speaking past each other as they have been doing. I mean, we know in Luthuli House, the SG and the spokesperson, Pulemabe, there in that faction of the losing faction of Nazareth. Mm-hmm. And then the Zizi Gordo, who's the head of the presidency in Luthuli House, we saw how they were speaking past each other during the plot debacle. And I think in the future, with other factional fights that are going to unfold, I doubt people are going to betray their factions and say, yeah, no, for the benefit of the party, let's speak this way. Even when they try to couch it. But in the bigger scheme of things, I think we're still going to see these things. As Q is saying, these things usually backfire, this fronting and pretending all is well. Because, I mean, with former President Zuma as well, they protected him and said for the better good of the party. But we know they dropped in 2014 national elections. They lost metros. Of course, we can't apportion all of that with him. But part of the sentiment of the unhappiness of the ANC voters was him being at the helm of the party. And the party kept on saying, no, we must close rank. This Western agenda, this, that. Mm. You know, but at times, as Q is saying, it usually gives you the opposite of what you were trying to achieve, because they're trying to achieve, you know, a good showing in the elections. It may actually go the other way, you know, in this regard. So it's only time that will tell, but interesting times ahead.
Perhaps the ANC still believes, or maybe believes, that their electorate is sort of ignorant to the fact, or sort of blind to the troubles going on within their party, that they can just spew out all of this stuff every now and again. Where let's look at Pulemobi yesterday denying, or very recently denying, that their website, troubles with their website was because of non-payments, and then we saw that little message that came up on their website afterwards.
So you're saying a very interesting point. You know why? The communication of a political party is an important, it's a fundamental, you know, tool. And somehow there's this temptation by this new spokesperson of the ANC to just lie, really. And for me, I find that extremely worrying, that as a reporter, you know, investigating and working closely with politicians that serve for the ruling party, that he could just deny a story and not just spin you, as his job would be, actually blatantly lie. And that's really going to affect our relationships between journalists and the ruling party in the run-up to elections. Because, any spin doctor Bible will tell you, do not lie. Lies have short legs. And that's, they've seen it happen in the plot circumstances, and now again it's unnecessary. And I think also it comes back to what Makhashule was saying yesterday at the press conference. People are not stupid.
Yeah.
So if you want to create this facade of this, you know, we're best friends, we're working together, you know, try a different way. but what else did Makhashule say that was interesting at the, after the NEC meeting?
You know, Makhashule didn't exactly say very much. He spoke very little about the economic stimulus package. When journalists asked him, you know, what are we going to do? How are we actually going to put this package into place? All he had to say was, well, listen, that's government's job. It's not my job to tell you this. We're going to wait for the job summit. We're going to wait for this. And then he had no answers. He talks about gender-based violence, and obviously just some political speak around that. And then most of the questions that came to him were about the plot, but he really did not have anything to say. Questions were asked directly to him by some of our fellow journalists, and he never answered them. Sometimes ignored them blatantly, as we have seen with some American politicians and leaders. And sometimes just not even spinning it around, but just not even answering the question, repeating what he said before, and disguising that as an answer to the question. But I think, perhaps the ANC maybe the ANC sort of believes that their electorate and that us as African citizens are still devoted to them as the party who liberated us, and will believe everything that they say. But it's been years later, and we're not as ignorant or blind to that fact anymore. And I feel like people are starting to open their eyes and calling the party out for what they really are.
Yeah, and I think their own research is showing them differently, which is, I think, why there's this push and pull phenomenon, which we've spoken about previously, where some people have realized, damn it, we need to sort our stuff. We need to sort ourselves out, because people are not going to just be blindly loyal to us. And on the other hand, there's some sort of, especially from people who are provincial strongmen, like your Ace Makhashule is, like, immensely popular from where he comes from, the Free State. Your Supra Mahuma Pero is immensely popular from where he comes from. And so those people genuinely believe, you know, that sentiment of former President Zuma, that the ANC will rule until Jesus comes. And so they don't believe that every single thing they say or don't say will have an impact on their electoral fortunes. I think we're going to be having this discussion a lot more in the run-up to the elections. And I think it's going to exhaust us, really.
So talking about elections, let's go move away a bit from the governing party to the party that thinks they're going to govern after 2019, the EFF. The EFF are really scooping up support on campuses in KZN. I mean, if we look at some recent elections, the Red Berets sort of defeated the ANC-aligned, you know, SASCO in the DUT, which is the Durban University of Technology, the University of Zululand, and the Mangosuthu University of Technology. Some massive wins there, some outright wins as well. I mean, if we look at the EFF's ideology, they've always sort of align themselves to the youth, always very youth concentrated, and also concentrated on the poor. and the struggles of the black citizens in South Africa. Is that ideology working now? Or if we're looking at the sort of mass win across the universities in KZN, it kind of shows that the youth are getting on board with the EFF and their ideology. But can we really say that this is a reflection of gaining support nationwide come elections next year, Mvumvu?
Thanks, Amil. Look, as far as that being a reflection of EFF's growing support at a national level, I don't think that would be a correct analysis. I mean, there wouldn't be any scientific study. I mean, there's a lot of those that have been said before, but when come elections time, elections would go a completely different way. And student politics are a completely different animal. What I, however, think is something to be, discussed in this regard is that what I read from the situation, especially in KwaZulu-Natal, we would know there's an issue of the Zulu nationalism, loyalty to our own. I think the youth, what it shows now is that the current generation are moving away from that. I mean, in any other day, you would have never, expected in KwaZulu-Natal for people to lean towards that way of a party that is led, the bigger party that is led by someone from the north, because of the nationalism that is entrenched historically in that particular province. But I think, as you were saying even earlier on, this new generation have their own way of thinking. They no longer use the same logic that was used by our forebears of aligning, in that side, aligning because you are Zulu, you are our own, therefore you have our own interest. It's a more broader analysis that people undergo to say, what is it that you are bringing us? What is it that you, SASCO, and your ANC people have brought us? I mean, can we work with you going forward? You haven't delivered. Let's try someone new and see how are they going to fare in this regard. So I think it's a reflection of a changing, mentality of the voter. Of course, it may have an impact here and there in the future. Of course, I mean, next year, the national elections are going to have probably the largest youth vote since 1994. It will be interesting to see if that loyalty, because mostly for the ANC since 1994, their beneficiation from the majority vote has been based on them being a liberation party.
Of course.
Historically, we align with them and all of those things. But next year, mostly the voters will be the youth who are thinking differently. So are they going to see the EFF as the solution, even in terms of the national politics? That is the question that I think will be answered next year. But for now, we can't make a conclusive conclusion to say that is what is going to happen. But definitely there is a change of mentality in how the young voter thinks compared to the old voter that is loyal to the ANC for reasons known only to them.
So, I mean, you probably know much more about student politics than I do, but are you saying that people in campuses, young people in campuses, it's more the personality than a long-standing loyalty? Is that what you're saying?
Not really the personality, but I'm saying people have become more open-minded in terms of how they analyze. They analyze based on what you are bringing. They analyze those that have been in charge. We know SASCO in the main, it is a known fact. They behave much more like ANC politicians. They plan the student monies. They don't deliver on their promises. They party all around and all of those things. So people analyze them based on their behavior and their service delivery record. What have they done in the years that we've elected them? They've planted our money. They haven't delivered us anything. But here's a new child on the block. That is the EFF. They haven't governed here. Why should we not give them a chance and see how they treat us going forward? And then I think they engage with parties based on that now. It's no longer about, SASCO is aligned to the ANC. ANC is this historical party. No, I think the young ones have moved out of that, closed and blinkered way of thinking. They are thinking broadly.
I think also I was paying a lot of attention around the Fees Must Fall saga, sitting with some of the student leaders back then and seeing the way they were speaking and their rhetoric at the time. And the EFF had that grip on Fees Must Fall that no other party had at the time. You could see it within the universities as well, where your student leaders from the EFF were really driving the agenda more than anybody else was at the time. And I feel that maybe since then, those student leaders have been able to gain more popularity and sort of drive their party in those universities more than anybody else. So maybe perhaps Now that we sort of have free education in quotation marks, we see that rhetoric and that favoritism with the EFF during Fees Must Fall now showing in voter support at those universities.
No, true. I mean, that could be true as well. I mean, but some of these leaders as well, I mean, they are completely new. That female president there in UniZulu, I've never seen that person anywhere until now, you know. But you are right on saying that the EFF's activism in the Fees Must Fall struggle really helped them to gain ground and popularity in student politics. That these people, and they fought for that, and it became true. As you say, we have the so-called free education now, and they're crediting themselves for that. So people believe in them more, that these guys can deliver. When they get into something, they push for it up to the end.
So 2 points on this. I think for me, I'm a bit weary to say, you know, the EFF is really captured. I think they just, to some degree, they shouted the loudest, which is why we heard them the most. Not to undermine the advancements in their cause, but just to be wary about the fact that perhaps we are only hearing them is because they're shouting the loudest. But the other issue is, I would think, for Julius Malema and the EFF national leadership to really harness this sort of growing blood of young activists or young, you know, students who are involved with the EFF, and make it their, or focus their attention as their base towards the 2019 elections, and use this kind of pockets of popularity to actually advance their messaging towards the elections. Because the one thing a lot of political analysts are saying is that, you know, the EFF is centered around Julius Malema as a person, whereas perhaps, you know, the DA is not so concentrated around Musi Maimane as the leader. You know, there are other pockets of people who have some sort of voice in different areas. And so for the EFF to move away from that and to say, maybe we should invest or pay attention and or nurture leaders that are coming from different areas. So for where and like, for example, the EFF prospects, I don't know what their research is showing about KZN, for example, but I wouldn't think that they would have their eyes set on even being in official opposition just yet. I mean, I could be wrong, but to use this student politics or this momentum in student politics and this enthusiasm from young people to their advantage, I would think would be a better way to canvass the votes for the elections.
No, true, Hugh. But you know what? I completely agree with your analysis, but I don't think it's going to happen in the EFF. I mean, knowing Julius Malema, you are right. The party is centered around him, and I think he's enjoying that. And I don't think he will allow anything else that will let other people shine and bask at his glory, because that is threatening in his politics. I mean, if anything, how he operates since the formation of the EFF, we see that he enjoys that he's the center of attention. I mean, when have you ever seen Floyd addressing somewhere alone and that being the biggest thing? No, it will never, unless Julius is there. Therefore, I don't think they are really interested in grooming the young ones that are coming through the student politics. Of course, they will take advantage of that in one way or the other, but I don't think they would get to the extent of letting them be, you know, the center of attention. That's not how Julius politics operate.
Okay, well, let's just move on to the next big thing that's happening this week. Nhlanhla Nene, our finance minister, is going to testify at the state capture inquiry on Wednesday. That's going to be quite a big testimony from our side. I mean, you saw the Guptas and their influence or their attempts, and some successful and some failures, to get into the finance department, into treasury and into SARS, where the money is really sort of dealt with. According to a report in the Sunday Times by Ranjini Munsami, Nene is expected to testify on a few things. Quite a lot of it centered around the nuclear deal, the failed nuclear deal, as we see it now. According to the article, the nuclear deal that was supposed to be awarded to the Russia's Rosatom and would have benefited the Guptas through their company, Shiva Uranium, the Petro SA guarantee to buy an 80% stake in Engen, and Golden State-owned oil company Sanangol, and also acceding to former SAA Chair Dudu Mieni's demands for the approval of funding and guarantees for the Airbus deal. So quite a lot of important things that Nene is going to be speaking about on Wednesday, also giving us more insights into the Gupta's workings in and around state capture. Q, what should we look out for tomorrow when it comes to, on Wednesday when it comes to Nene?
I think that the firing of Nhlanhla Nene in 2015, that night we all remember very well, was the turning of events in the state capture project. Firstly, because it exposed the state capture, or it began to expose the extent of the state capture project, but also it was the peak of the Guptas trying to capture the state, and obviously Nene was seen to be a the biggest or the highest profile person to fall as a result of state capture. There were a lot of other people that fell as a result of this influence by the Gupta family. So Nene has really not spoken much about things after his firing, even when he came back to government. When Ramaphosa phoned him and said, you know, we need you to come back to government this year. He says he was quite wary, but he didn't really want to because he was just settled in the private sector. But he really does have a story to tell. And Mkabisi Jern has kind of opened up towards that, that can of worms when he spoke about the hostility that, Treasury faced in the run-up to that. And now we're going to hear it from the horse's mouth. But I think his testimony will be multi-pronged. And the first of which would be obviously his firing and what led up to his firing. And the Rosatom deal is now the non-deal, is integral to that chapter in the state capture sort of documentary. But the second thing is... just his own personality and his role in the Treasury and the influence that he was placed under, and now there's more evidence coming out that he actually met the Guptas. So he will obviously have to take the commission into his confidence and talk about those meetings. And I think the most important thing would be for him to detail, besides the Russian deal and the nuclear deal, what other kind of either influence or pressure he was under, and also what role does he think former President Jacob Zuma played in this, because he was the Minister of Finance, and if there was any pressure being exerted on him, it would have been directly from the President, and I think that would be important.
Okay, thank you everyone for joining us on this week's edition of Sunday Times Politics Weekly. We'll catch up again next week. Thanks for listening, and thanks colleagues for joining me. Have a good week.